Welcome back to the home of explanations. You've got More Than Money Radio. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor with 780 years of experience at your service this Saturday morning. Halloween, spooky times, so spooky that I was afraid to come to the studio today. So we're recording a special edition of More Than Money Live.
Scared you out of town.
I am out of town. Hey, how can you be two places at once when you're nowhere at all, man? Sorry, that's just a 60s reference. And for those of you that are in...
I don't get it.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying not to take advantage of your immaturity and youthfulness. And someday you'll be mature and wise.
I hope not.
Someday I hope to be mature and wise. Welcome back to More Than Money. If you are just joining us, again, a special edition of More Than Money recorded live in the studio. Joining me in the studio, Mr. Mark Belsack. Welcome back, sir.
Oh, thank you.
How you doing so far?
I'm here. So far, so good. I haven't spilled anything on the board.
That's good.
A plus.
That is a plus. There's no question about that. If you are a loyal listener to More Than Money, you're used to being able to call in and ask questions, and we absolutely welcome that on a week by week basis. In this particular case, we're taking email questions. Gene@askmtm.com, and if your question is the question of the week, it'll be posted to our website. It'll be sent out to literally thousands of people in a blog. You will be famous from coast to coast. Kinda. It's kinda. Come on. And we're going to send you a very special thank you gift, an autographed copy of The Secrets of Lake Road by Bethlehem's own Karen Catcher. Lots going on in the markets. Lots of uncertainty. Lots of ups and downs. As we're recording this show today, the market has shown a little bit of an upward lift since the first of the month, right. 1st of October. When someone asks in your client meetings, what do you think is going to happen with the markets, what's your response?
I can say without hesitation, in the utmost confidence, I have no clue.
No psychic ability.
No.
No tarot cards.
None.
No crystal ball.
Yeah. No.
Well, and if of course, loyal listeners will tell you, I have said many, many times that folks who predict the stock market future. Of course, we just lost Yogi Berra. God rest his soul. Yogi, famous for saying, predicting is really hard, especially about the future. My spin on folks who attempt to predict or claim to have predicted stock market movements is that they are either on medication or they should be on medication or they're flat out criminals.
Right.
Or it could be a combination of the above. If we can't predict the movements of the market, how do we construct an intelligent investment portfolio?
This actually circles back to the original question of the show, talking about what types of clients are right for us. And we're very fortunate to work with clients who have reasonable expectations. And I think that the idea is that if we can take advantage of some of the upside and protect on the downside, that's a win. So I want to make money. I don't want to lose it. Sounds simple enough.
And what kind of techniques, what kind of strategies, what kind of thought processes might support an objective of, I want to make a reasonable upside, but I really want to protect as much as I can on the downside?
That's a great question. It's not easy because the markets aren't the same as they were 5 years ago. They're not the same as they were 10 years ago. They're not the same as they were 15 or 20 years ago. So you've got a lot of investors who are looking at, what was deemed modern portfolio theory and trying to use ways to invest in the market that were appropriate at a time that has nothing to do with what we're looking at today.
Right.
One of the single biggest drivers, we talk about this in the office all the time, one of the single biggest drivers of the market today has nothing to do with fundamentals and has nothing to do with anything that you can quantify. And I don't mean the primary drivers of why it goes up and why it goes down. I'm talking volatility.
Right.
The single biggest challenge with the market today is that you can't quantify fear. It's impossible. And so when we're trying to construct a portfolio, the best that you can do, and that's literally what it is, it's that we'll do the best that we can do to have something in place to provide an exit strategy or a way to buffer the downside and to be there when the market goes up.
Bulletproof?
No.
No, goodness. No. Silliest. Folks who are looking for complete Teflon-coated bulletproof guarantees, we're talking about now very different approaches, fixed annuities, fixed index annuities. There's a lot of noise being tossed around these days, particularly on radio and TV, about fixed indexed annuities. And to be fair, the vast majority of folks who are kind of pushing those won't even use the correct name. They won't even utter the word annuity.
Right.
They have all kinds of marketing gigs. But the reality is, if somebody said to you, I absolutely can't stomach losing a penny, but I want to make more than 0.05, a fixed indexed annuity might be a very good option.
It very might well be. Yeah.
What particular investment approach? Yeah, that's, sorry, I got to start over. I'm erasing that. You can't see this at home, but I'm erasing that from the board, and we're going to start over. Is there an investment approach that you consider to be superior to all others?
No.
Thank you very much.
And the follow-up to that is, yeah, as everyone who's been listening, is because it all depends.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the show. appreciate being here. Take care.
Tip your waiters. It does depend. Absolutely depends. And that's my angst. That's my anger. That's my agita with these quote-unquote financial advisors. And they're not. They are salespeople. And every single answer is fill in the blank. It's annuities. Every single answer is real estate. Every single answer is life insurance. Every single answer is real estate. Every single answer to every single issue. My dad, who was a carpenter, said that if the only tool that you own is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And that's the case. They got one tool. They make a lot of money, big commissions. In some cases, these items that folks are pushing, where their agenda has nothing to do with what's in the best interest of the client,
right,
has what's to do with what's in the best interest of their cash flow. They're being paid 5, 7, 9, 11% commissions. Under our platforms, in order to get 11%, we've got to work for our clients 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to get the ink to dry on the check, and they get that money up front.
Right.
So is there a conflict of interest? What's the right phrase? I'm thinking about it. I learned it in the MBA. Oh, yeah. Hell yes. Yeah. There is a conflict of interest. My apologies. I was a little profane. But you understand my frustration. You're listening to More Than Money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. You've got Mark Belsack in the studio. Mark, an associate advisor with More Than Money, been with us for years, 22 years as a financial advisor, single dad of three great young men, and they are young men. Gosh, they're growing up. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. I literally have the entire school district covered. I've got high school, middle school, and elementary school.
And go in different directions, every single one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so God bless us.
And they all get along so well as brothers. They never fight. Ever. They do.
I was going to say, he's biting.
I see the bruises to prove it. They're just pummeling each other every day.
Brothers that, I never heard that before.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure indeed. Speaking of go figure, if you have a question for us, even though we're not taking calls this morning, you can send me an email, gene@askmtm.com. Since I know where I am, I can absolutely review your emails. I may even have an answer to you before the end of the show, because I'm not actually doing the show. Yeah, that's so spooky.
Crazy.
Speaking of spooky, since it's Halloween, do you have any spooky questions for me?
I do, and it's one that has floated around the office quite a bit because it's, as we found, probably one of the most complicated and misunderstood topics. You know where I'm going. There's this little thing.
You know I'm under the weather.
There's this little thing that a lot of our clients are talking about these days. I don't know. Social Security.
Oh, this is easy. Go ahead. Ask any question you want. Yes. I got it. I got this.
That's right.
Go ahead.
How do you do it?
It depends.
Perfect.
Next.
Perfect.
Now serving number seven. Number seven, Social Security is a challenging question. And it's a challenging question for absolutely everyone.
Right.
Husbands and wives, now it's challenging by an exponential factor. Because what do I do for me? Wait a second. If that's best for me, is it also best for her? What does she do? Is that, if she does that, is that, does that hurt me? How? Oh, yowza, my head hurts. So the mix and match options and opportunities, as you well know, are ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're ridiculous. Now, I will set the stage. John has heard me say this many, many times. There's only one moment in your lifetime when you will absolutely be able to determine whether or not you have picked the correct Social Security strategy. And that's just before the bus hits you. Exactly.
Very good.
If you're going, I've got to say goodbye, I love you all. Oh, crap.
I should have filed and suspended.
I should have taken at 63. Crap. I'm so upset. The reality is that the opportunities, the planning opportunities with Social Security are pretty impressive.
Right.
The planning challenges with Social Security are pretty daunting. And you will not know that you have picked exactly the right choice until. So it's a probabilities game.
Right.
It is. I am going to make the selection that, based on everything I know at the moment, gives me the greatest probability of ending up being happy when all is said and done.
So what do you do when a client comes in and you probably never heard this before? Of course. When a client comes in and says that I want to take Social Security because it's going to go away, and if I don't claim it now, I will never be able to get it.
How committed are you to that concept? That's my question to the client.
Right.
Client says, oh, I believe that 100%. Take it. Take it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Now, be aware that there are certain collateral damages that might occur. You take it immediately, you may end up paying tax on a big chunk of it because your income is too high. If you take it immediately and you're still working prior to age 66 or 67, you may lose a big chunk of it.
Right.
You may find that by taking it early, if it doesn't go away, that you have effectively reduced what your spouse will get for maybe the next 30 years. So I'm just saying, here are a couple of things you might want to think about. And if my client says to me, I've thought about this, I don't believe for a minute that it's going to last more than the next couple of years, I want to get at least something, then file tomorrow.
Right.
Take the money, stick it in your pocket, and smile. Because am I here to tell him he's wrong? I don't know that he's wrong. I don't know that he's wrong. You and I, we've looked very carefully at that big chunk of money that they have in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
They keep it in the vault, you know, the Social Security Trust Fund.
Sure.
Oh, my God. There's not a thinking human being on the planet that doesn't already understand that it's just a big pile of IOUs from government bureaucrats and elected officials that idiots every single one. So are there reasons to be concerned? Of course. Would that be my first choice? Probably not.
Right.
Probably not. That's it?
That's it.
That's all you got?
No, it's interesting. I feel like we have this conversation
a lot
in a different way almost every day. And the more research that we do, and obviously we've got our friend, he's Mark, now in the Allentown office.
Mark Basak.
Who's been tremendously helpful.
Which is, he's not the same as Mark Belsack?
No, but they're both pretty cool.
And that's good. That's good.
One knows a lot about Social Security. One needs help asking the other guy.
One relies on the guy who knows a lot about Social Security. Right back to our philosophy of, do we know everything there is to know? Absolutely not. But do we know people who know basically everything there is to know? Right. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the most misunderstood pieces of the Social Security process is spousal benefits.
Interesting you should say that, yes.
Why is that interesting?
Because
it's radio, dude. You got to kind of keep the conversation right. Moving forward. You know, kind of.
Spousal benefits may be helpful for you, even if you are no longer married to that spouse.
Pretty interesting.
A lot of people didn't know that.
Pretty interesting indeed. Absolutely. The rule is you have to have been married
10 years.
10 years. And you cannot be remarried.
Correct.
So paint this scenario. Husband and wife married 22, 23 years. They're now divorced. She's working, supporting herself. And then somebody on radio, perhaps, some brilliant young advisor might suggest, hey, did you know if you were married for 10 years, you can collect spousal benefits on your ex-husband?
Right.
Wow. You can also collect survivor benefits on your ex-spouse.
The old Johnny Carson model.
Well, the Johnny Carson model, indeed. Johnny Carson married four times.
Right.
10 years at least for all four.
Right.
At one point, there were four women collecting Social Security benefits on Johnny Carson.
Crazy.
Crazy indeed. Is it any wonder that the Social Security Trust Fund is just a pile of IOUs? There are hundreds of ways for folks to collect. Here's one that you probably already know, but a lot of folks wouldn't.
Okay.
Paint the scenario that you're...
Oh, go ahead.
That was a success. I put up with this all day long. You're collecting Social Security.
Okay.
And as is sometimes the case for folks who are particularly second marriages, gentlemen collecting Social Security has kids still in high school.
Right.
His kids can collect Social Security.
Okay. That's cool.
A lot of folks are aware that if dad dies, kids that are 18 and under collect Social Security benefits. People are aware of that. Dad does not have to die. He just has to be collecting and have children under age 18.
So now, is that collecting at age 62 or collecting full retirement age?
It's collecting whenever he decides to collect. So he's 62, decides to retire. He's got kids that are 8, 10, and 12. He collects, pick a number, $2,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
They can collect up to 75% of that amount.
Wow.
Split between the kids. So instead of $2,000 a month, he's got another $1,500 a month coming through the door. Very interesting.
That is pretty cool.
Very, very interesting. Social Security is. It's, and again, we've referenced Mark Basak. Mm-hmm. Mark is not just one of the smartest people we know in terms of Social Security, but he's one of the most thoughtful people that we know in terms of helping people get where they want to be.
I actually we met with a client last week with a Social Security question. And so she went to the Social Security office in Bethlehem, and they gave her an answer. And I thought it was not as concise of an answer as I would have hoped. And so I forwarded that email to Mark, and Mark's response is, give me your telephone number and I will call her.
Oh, my goodness. There are indeed folks out there like Mark Basak that are willing to serve in their capacity. God bless them. Shifting gears on you.
Sure. We've
got an interesting question this week that I don't think you're going to know the answer to, so I'm not going to pose it to you as a question.
Okay.
I'm going to pose it as a question.
To John.
to John.
I don't know. We figured there's strong
John is an innocent victim in every show. He's just like, I'm just trying to get my job done, man. Don't be doing that to me.
Yeah, but you know, if he does know the answer, that's going to be crazy.
He knows a lot of stuff.
There we go.
He pays attention. Here's the question. A young lady's trying to help a young couple in her church. They want to buy a house. They have not saved enough for a 20% down payment.
Right.
And their income, it's consistent, but it's not large. And her question is there a way for a young couple in that circumstance to be able to afford to buy a house? Pretty interesting challenge.
No, that's great. And I'm sure not too uncommon.
I think very common today.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very hard, especially young people coming out of college, student loans. Oh my gosh, choking them. Is it hard? Is it tough enough to save? Sure. Then add student loans to the mix. I think it's a very common question.
Right.
I think it's a very common question. Now, you go to the bank. You go, I don't got. The bank says, see ya. Nature of the beast. Go to a mortgage broker. I don't have. See ya. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. But there are two options that I think are very interesting. The first takes a little bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
Guarantee you, a little bit of work. You see the average home. People are saying, hey, write me a check. Let's go. These kids can't write checks.
Right.
So they've got to find a situation where the seller is more interested in the transaction, more interested in helping put the transaction together than the average seller. The average seller says, sure, go get your mortgage, come back to me, write me a big check. Some sellers, it might be that they inherited a home. It might be that they might be a divorce. It might be a bankruptcy. It might be a lot of stuff. They can finance the house themselves.
How does that work?
That's pretty cool. Just as simple as can be. How it works is I want to buy your $100,000 house. I don't have $20,000 down payment. I have $9,000. I will give you the $9,000. You lend me $91,000. We will create the legal documents to create a mortgage. We'll transfer the deed to my name as it would be if I was buying it with a bank. Your mortgage will be registered at the courthouse as a lien against my house. I pay you every month just as I would the bank. Some sellers, of course, it doesn't fit for 90% of the sellers. We
right.
get that.
Mm-hmm.
But some sellers are going to go, wait a second. So two things are really good for me. Number one, I don't have to pay tax on the whole amount because I'm not getting the whole amount. I'm receiving payments over time, and I pay taxes. I get my payments. That's nice. That reduces my tax bite. Number two, I was going to take that money and put it in the bank, and I was going to earn, 0.00. How about you pay me 4%? Now, instead of getting nothing and paying a lot of tax, I pay a little tiny bit of tax. I get 4% on my money. Instead of making, 200-300 bucks a year in interest, I make $3,500 a year in interest.
So what protects the seller, though?
They have a recorded mortgage. It's the same protection a bank has. If you stop making payments, they foreclose, they keep your down payment, they keep all the payments you've made, and they get the house back. So from a seller standpoint, pretty good stuff. A minute or so, sir. I'm going to give you a little radio lesson right now. This is called a tease. We're not done with that question because I've got another way that young couple can buy a house without using a bank. But we got to take a break. This is our last half hour break, which means another half hour of More Than Money coming up after the break, after Fox Network News, and giving you all the information you need. Have a great weekend. You're listening to a very special edition of More Than Money, recorded live in the studio. Yours truly, Gene Dickinson, our good friend Mark Belsack, and we're not done yet. So stick with us. If you've got a question, shoot me an email, gene@askmtm.com. We'll be back after this on More Than Money. Ah, but we offer explanations galore. You've got more than money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. Joining me in the studio, associate advisor with More Than Money, and our good friend Mark Belsack. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And as we enter our last full segment of this very special edition of More Than Money, as we've recorded this show live in the studio for broadcast on Halloween. All right, I get it's not that scary. It's like 9:30 in the morning. Come on. It's like there's not a lot of hobgoblins out at 9:35 in the morning. I'm just saying. If you're really scared right now, for God's sakes, don't go out tonight. You're going to have a heart attack. That's bad stuff. If you've been with us since 8 o'clock this morning, thank you so very much. It's very kind of you. A fair number of our folks actually do spend the entire breakfast morning with us, and we appreciate that very, very much. As we're out and about, lots of folks will stop us, and you're very, very kind in your compliments, and it's nice to know that folks do listen. It means a great deal to us. If you're just joining us and you feel like you've missed something, it's because you've missed something. That's why you feel that way. Oh, my gosh, like three-quarters of the show. As of Monday, we will have the show posted to the website, and you can listen to the entire show and get all the good information that we've had up till now. Now, before our break, we were talking about a young couple. It doesn't have to be young. Folks find themselves in circumstances throughout their lives where you're going, hey, came out of a tough patch. I don't have a whole lot of money for down payment.
Mm-hmm.
I work hard. I'm honorable. I would like to buy a house, but the banks and the mortgage brokers go, no thanks. You just don't meet our qualifications. And one idea was you find a seller who is motivated, really wants to sell the house, and understands that if they become the banker, if they take a down payment, whatever you're able to afford, and accept monthly payments, number one, they might reduce their tax bill. That would be a good thing. And number two, they might go from, I'm going to put it in the bank and earn 0.000 something, nothing. And if it's 100 grand and I put it in the bank and I'm going to make even a quarter of 1 point, I'm going to make $250.
Right.
If I lend it to you and I do it correctly, if I do it reasonably, if I do it responsibly, I might make as much as $4,000 a year. Wow. That's crazy talk. For some sellers, that's the answer to a prayer.
Yeah, that's definitely a pretty cool scenario.
You want another one?
Sure.
Here's, again, the idea is it right for everybody? Absolutely not. The idea that we just discussed, will it work for, no. It depends on so many different things, of course. Here's another one. Young couple, or not so young. Somebody in the family, might be grandma, might be mom and dad, somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Is sitting with a fair amount of money in the bank, and they're getting, again, 0.000. Would they be benefited by lending the money to this couple under the same set of circumstances? Now we're not asking the seller to be the bank. We're asking grandma to be the bank.
Right.
And the exact same circumstances. We're doing it absolutely according to the book. We are doing all the right paperwork. We're employing an attorney to make sure that things are done correctly and they're filed at the courthouse and grandma is protected. But grandma goes from, I made $200 on a 100 grand CD. This is crazy talk. To this year, I made $4,000. How might that benefit a young lady such as grandmother, who's on a fixed income, to go from $200 a year of interest to $4,000 a year in interest? So does it help the young couple? Obviously. Could it help grandma?
Sure.
Absolutely. Now, did you want to add your wrinkle that we talked about on the break?
So we were talking about how, in essence, the seller would become their own mortgage company.
Oh, sure.
Kind of. So what happens if, let's say you've got mom, and the idea is that you ultimately want to gift the house. Could you create this scenario where she becomes, the mom becomes the mortgage company, and then allow your children who are buying the house from you to just not make their payments?
The answer is yes. Okay. The forgiveness of those payments will become a gift from mom to the kids. And depending on the amount of the payments, pick a number, let's say it's $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
During the course of a year, they owe $12,000. Mother says, you're forgiven. Mother has made a $12,000 gift to a child or children, and that is under the annual exclusion. She doesn't even have to fill out a piece of paper. Isn't that interesting? Now, whether she should do that,
right?
That's a very different question. And are we suggesting that a young couple go to mom or grandma with the idea of, not only do we want to borrow money, but we have no intention of paying it back? No, I think that is a horrendous approach. I think you got to be way more responsible than that. You've got to be way more willing to be in the game than that. You've got to be way more willing to extend yourself than that. If grandma or mom decide to give you money, God bless them. Grandmas and ma's make all kinds of decisions that are not necessarily financially astute, but they're emotionally driven.
Right.
But if you are absolutely willing to benefit mom or grandma, as well as they understand they're benefiting you just at a tremendous level, make the payments. Make the payments. And if you can't afford to make the payments, don't buy the house.
Right.
My opinion. Of course, I would be right. Just people disagree would be wrong. That's kind of how that works. Gene at askmtm.com. Send me an email if you've got a question. We will absolutely answer that for you, and you will be eligible to be the question of the week. And if you are the question of the week, you will be posted on our website, seen coast to coast and well beyond. We get a report of page views on our website.
Right.
And, of course, the United States is like 94% of all the page views are United States. We get folks all around the world checking out our website. Very, very cool. And of course, every state in the nation, people are checking it out. We get, as John well knows, we have handled questions on air from California, from state of Washington, from South Carolina, well, before the flood. Oh, my Ow. Goodness. Oh, God bless them. One of the most beautiful places in the country, Charleston, just gorgeous. And now our prayers go out to them. God bless them. God bless them, everyone. But if you have a question, it'll be posted to our website. It'll be sent as a blog to our literally thousands of people on our distribution list. By the way, you don't even know this. I will share this with you as of this morning. Our very first listener question of the week was sent out as a blog Wednesday. And it was a question about spousal Social Security.
All right.
Young lady had the question. It was a great question. My answer was amazing, as you might expect.
Of course.
Emails have a certain open rate. And if you send out 1,000 emails and 5 or 10% of the folks get that and open it up, that's a pretty good response. 28%. And then if there's a link inside, if you can get 2 or 3% of those folks who actually open the email to click on the link, 36%.
Yeah. But if you told me the topic was Social Security, I mean...
Well, maybe so.
I'm surprised, but not so much. I mean, that's just a huge...
It's a huge topic. Huge topic. Gene at askmtm.com. Question for me?
No.
Then I got you covered. Fixed indexed annuities.
Yes.
Topic of too many radio shows where they never use the name. They offer free books written by guys who only think fixed indexed annuities are the answer to every single person's prayer. But that doesn't make them wrong all the time. What do they say? Blind squirrels find acorns? Sure. So fixed indexed annuities. Give me the just one or two facts about a fixed indexed annuity that somebody says, hey, what do you know about them? One of the first things that would come to mind is what?
Guaranteed stream of income.
Absolutely. So guaranteed principal, guaranteed return with an upside, a potential.
Right.
So if somebody said to you, hey, I've got a block of money. I don't want to lose a penny. Ooh, maybe this makes some sense. Hey, if they said to you, I've got a block of money. I want to make a really strong rate of return. Oh.
Yeah, not so much.
Not so much. Because these are designed to give us currently between, say, 1% and as much as 5.5% or 6%. And that's it. That's it. It's not going to make less. It's not going to make any more. But if you've got a block of money where that seems to make sense, it's a potential option. Anything kind of make you scratch your head about fixed indexed annuities?
A lot.
My answer exactly. There, people, and again, my angst, my anxiety, my anger when I listen to certain show hosts that are they're going on and you know you're never going to lose and you're going to make stock market returns and you're going to, you know what? If I could reach through, I'd smack you, because you are presenting a very complex product. As if it were the simplest thing on the planet. Right. Isn't life grand? You want to smack them. And the number of moving parts inside a fixed index annuity can boggle the mind.
Right.
So it is extremely important. It's my opinion. But again, I would be correct. Everyone else would be wrong. It's extremely important that you're in a position that you understand the fixed index annuity prior to investing. Don't be going in for a second opinion meeting 7 months later going, oh, now that I understand this, I don't want it. Because in all likelihood, you are tied up for 5, 7, 9, 11 years.
Right.
Years. Gene at AskMTM.com. Leverage.
Yes.
Leverage is an interesting idea. I've apparently stumbled into a stream of real estate questions this week. So
okay.
This is it doesn't dovetail at all with the couple trying to buy a house because it is a very different use of the of real estate, and it's real estate as an investment, purely as an investment. Leverage, if somebody said to you, I'm not even sure what leverage is, how do you explain leverage?
I would say, let me go get Gene.
And then Gene would say, leverage is when you put up a little bit of your money and you borrow a lot of other people's money.
Right.
So if, for example, an investment piece of real estate requires you to put 25% as a down payment.
Mm-hmm.
So you put up $1, somebody else is putting up $3.
Right.
So that leverage, that ability to control a much bigger block of an asset, in this particular case, real estate.
So the degree of leverage is directly proportional to the ratio of what you're putting up versus what you're borrowing.
That is I have no idea what he just said. No, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct. And coincidentally, if the ratio of how much you're putting up to how much you're borrowing rises, what also rises? Risk.
Yes.
Like there's like holy cow risk. And here's why. And this is the largely misunderstood issue of leverage. Leverage is a good thing. Ooh, it depends.
Right.
It depends. Here's the example. Simple numbers, because I want to do simple math.
Math is much easier.
Because it's Halloween. It's Saturday morning. I don't want to get a headache.
Right.
Right? Okay. $100,000 property,
mm-hmm.
I put up $25,000, which is great. The property goes up 3% in value. Not very much, 3%. That's not very much.
Right.
3% of $100,000 is?
$3,000.
$3,000. No, not 10. Jeez, it's like you don't know nothing.
Six, eight.
You don't know nothing. $3,000
right.
off of $100,000, mm-hmm. not a particularly impressive number.
Right.
How about 3,000 off of 25 grand?
Much better.
Much better, because that's your actual investment. What did you put in? You put in 25 grand. If you're getting $3,000, that's a 12% return. 12% return is pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. So that's leverage. Leverage is great. Thank you very much. Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. What if it doesn't go up 3%? What if it goes down 3%? Could real estate go down in value?
Sure.
Sure, absolutely. Now, I will tell you, because I'm much older than everyone else in this room, just makes me more mature. All right. I think John just choked. wisdom comes from experience. By the way, wisdom comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment. That's kind of the way that works. 10 years ago, if we talked about real estate going up, people would have said, of course. Does real estate ever go down? The answer would have been, I don't think so.
It can't. It always goes up.
10 years ago, that would have been an accepted statement of fact.
Right.
Now, we've come through 2008, 9, and beyond, and people are going, oh, damn right it can go down. Mm-hmm. Don't be ridiculous. Of course it can go down. Good. That's a very, very wise starting point for understanding how this unfolds. $100,000 goes down 3%. $3,000, not a big deal.
Right.
Your investment was 25. So your percentage loss is what?
What we say, 12?
12% loss. Mm-hmm. How about running that out for 3 or 4 years?
Right.
And all of a sudden, real estate, which is a no-lose, isn't it grand, everybody wins kind of an operation, because of leverage, we are now in a position where we're down 40% in 3 years. Holy cow. Holy cow is, again, a technical term for, you got to be really, really careful. You got to really, really know what you're doing. Leverage can be what you call your double-edged sword. Gene at askmtm.com. Let me check for you. You've run through your questions this morning.
I have a pretty simple question.
I'm a simple-minded guy. Give it a go.
So we've seen an extraordinarily volatile time in the market.
Yes.
And the tail end of last year and the beginning of this year, I would talk to clients and tell them that I have not seen a more volatile year than I did in 2014. And I exclude 2008 because that pretty much just went down.
Okay.
So volatility meaning mood swings, S&P in January is down 3. It's up 5.5 in February. That's volatility.
Yep.
So you look at June, August, and September, collectively the S&P is down 10%. What do you say to a client to talk them off the ledge? Or don't you?
Oh, if we're in a position where we're talking somebody off a ledge based on the volatility we've seen this year, we have made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
We as advisors have made a mistake. Either in misunderstanding the client, who they are, their objectives, and their tolerances.
Right.
Or we've made a mistake in explaining to our client why we've chosen the investment approach that we have. For example, someone comes to you and says, here's $100,000 I want you to invest. I need it back next April. How do you respond?
Something extraordinarily conservative,
like the bank.
A bank account.
The bank. We wouldn't invest it.
Right.
Because the time frame is too short.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, anything short of 3 years is too short.
Right.
So the vast majority of our clients, the vast majority of all of our clients at More Than Money,
mm-hmm.
Being either retired or on that glide path towards retirement, do we have 100% of their money in the stock market?
No.
Not even close.
Right.
Some cases it's half, in some cases it's 40%, in some cases it's 30% or less, which leaves huge blocks of money in relatively more stable positions.
Right.
Cash, fixed income, etc. So knowing that if the market drops 10%, and you'll know your numbers kind of because we do so many reviews,
mm-hmm.
Your average client, when the market dropped 10%, they saw a portfolio drop roughly what number?
Our clients have seen somewhere around half of that.
Half of that or less.
Right.
No surprise. Is that because we knew? We didn't know. Nobody knows. Is it because we're geniuses? Oh, okay, maybe. I mean, that may have some factor in there.
Right.
But the reality is it's because it was designed that way.
Right.
They did not have a full market exposure. So should it have gone down? If you're only half in the market, should you go down less than half or less? Sure.
Right. Sure. And I bring that up because I did have a client meeting this week. And so he came in and he said, I want you to talk me off the ledge. Nice. And so my response was similar to yours in the general thought is, well, why do I have to?
Well, and the answer may be, to in fairness to the client, things have changed.
Exactly.
For him.
Right.
For him.
And so by that I mean I'm not it's getting a better understanding of why you're there, and maybe you have a right to be there, and maybe that requires us to make an adjustment.
That's true.
In exactly what we're doing.
And alternatively, it may be nothing has changed. Except my heart is really racing.
Right.
And it would be great just to have some words of comfort.
Sure.
And one of the things that I tell all my clients, if you think it's time to throw yourself out a window, please come to our office
mm-hmm.
for two reasons. Number one, so I can talk you through this and maybe make you feel better. And number two, throw yourself out one of our windows because, especially in the back, the drop is about 14 inches. And there's a lot of really thick mulch. It's kind of soft. So you might turn an ankle, but that's about as bad as it can be. Did that help?
Very good.
Folks, we just have 3 minutes or so before this edition, very special edition of More Than Money, comes to a close. First of all, thanks to Mark Belsack. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
It was nice of you to be had. That was good for you. God bless. I made that up. I have no idea. We've covered an awful lot of ground this morning. We've talked about alternative investment platforms like separately managed accounts.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a fair amount about Social Security strategies and how to select what's best in terms of strategy for you. We've talked about real estate and gifting. We've talked about an awful lot of information. If you have questions about any of that, if you'd like to perhaps meet with Mark and have a second opinion, and absolutely, there's no charge, there's no obligation, there's no fee, there's no pressure. It's just nice people getting together to exchange ideas to see if we can be of service. Happy to arrange that for you. It's easy, easy, easy to do. You can certainly send me an email, gene@askmtm.com, gene@askmtm.com. You should absolutely check out our website if you have not had a chance to kind of noodle around in the podcast inventory and see some of the topics we've covered on previous radio shows. Check that out. You can listen to shows in total, in parts, pull out whatever you wish. And there's all the contact information for the folks that are part of our More Than Money team. And of course, you can be old fashioned about this. Phones actually work. 610-746-7007. 610-746-7007. You can call Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 5 o'clock and speak to a real, live, wonderful human being. And, of course, any other time 24/7 you can call. And through the miracles of technology, you can absolutely leave us a message and we'll be getting back at you. How much time do I have, sir? Ah, folks, you folks are more than kind to spend part of your Saturday with us. We'll see you next time on More Than Money.